Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and as an O Magazine insider, I'd like to introduce you today to three dynamic ladies who are also O Magazine insiders. All of these women have a story, and each of these women took paths that led to great achievements, accomplishing goals, overcoming devastation and loss, and rising from the ashes like the phoenix that they are. I'm so very, very blessed to have these new women in my life, and I truly believe that there's no coincidences, that everything's in divine order, everything happens for a reason, we're exactly where we need to be with the people we need to be with. So we begin our show with my first guest, and my first guest is such a lovely lady. Tanya Taylor is a wife, mother, a friend to many, many people. She's got over 15 years of IT experience, which is beyond incredible to me. I can barely do my email. And we're going to find out how she squeezes her TV binge-watching into her incredibly busy days. Then we sit down and we talk with Deborah Ross. Deborah knew her calling as a vet from childhood, and Deborah's many, many fundraising charities that she participates in really shows where she's coming from her heart, from her soul. And our third guest to the show, we will speak with Eileen Fruit Handler and her incredibly empowering and inspiring story, also going from corporate America to being a yogi. So that, to me, is just such a phenomenal transformation. I can't wait to sit down and talk with her about that. So without further ado, please welcome with me the O Magazine insiders to the show. And for our first guest, we welcome Tanya Taylor. Welcome, Tanya. Thank you for being on Unlimited Realities today.
Hi, Lisa. I am so excited to be here. I just can't even describe it. My heart is pounding, and you will probably hear me. You'll probably hear a lot of noise here in a minute. But, yes, I'm so grateful, and thank you so much for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, my pleasure. Are you kidding? It's a selfish little treat I get because I get to vibe with all of you guys. So I just, we spoke because you know everything computers. I know absolutely nothing computers. And just you are just this incredible, fabulous woman. You're a wife, a mother, and you have numerous social connections. What I love about you also is that you're so varied. So let's talk about, how did you start your career in IT? How did that call to you?
Yeah, you know, it was not intentional, to be honest. I just remember being in high school, and my mom one day just asked me this, you know, question. Like, it just came out of nowhere, and she said, well, what do you want to be? And, of course, I had not given it any thought whatsoever because I was busy being a teenager. I'm, like, in the booster club, you know, I'm at the games, rah-rah. You know, I'm in the band twirling flags. I'm in the French club speaking parler français. You know, I'm just being a teenager. And who's thinking about, you know, working when you're a teenager? So, you know, so then she threw this suggestion out. She says, I think you should be a lawyer. And, you know, she said, you know, you're really good at arguing a point and, you know, you have really sound thinking. You should be a lawyer. I think that's what you should do. And so when you do that, you know, it's like she already knew what I should be. So she says, you should also go to a courthouse to kind of see what it's like. And, you know, she's just planning everything out for me.
Great.
And
mom.
I was like, yeah, I know, right? And I said, okay. And then I just kind of walked away and I just kind of stopped and I thought, wait a minute, you know, I don't think that really is what I want. You know, it just that simple conversation gave me the opportunity to really search myself and ask myself and stop and just listen to what I wanted in life and how I wanted to live. And so, you know, in that moment, I said, you know, Mom, I don't think I want to be a lawyer, you know. And then she said, okay, well, whatever you do, you know, do something that you like because you may do it forever. And so that was my call to action to take whatever decision I made very seriously. And then the last thing she said to me in parting in this conversation was, you know, just do something that you like. So that comment led me to self-discovery. And like I said, my mom knew me very well. She knew my strengths. She, you know, thought that I would be a great lawyer, and maybe I would have been, but that I didn't feel like that was my calling.
Right.
And at the time, like I said, I wasn't a very spiritual person, but I did believe in God, and I believe that that conversation led me to asking myself, what was the life I wanted to live? Who was the person I wanted to become? And so just by happenstance, we moved from Indiana to Illinois, and we didn't have a home in Illinois, so I had this crazy two-hour commute from, you know, the car to the train to the bus to the school. And this was in the mid-70s where there was no internet, there was no PC, there was nothing, you know, there was just machines the size of a compact car inside buildings. And so when I had this two-hour commute and I was on my mom's job and I saw this machine, didn't know what it was, and I just was drawn to it.
Wow.
And that's how it happened for me. And I said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, remembering what my mother said. I said, I like this thing. I want to do this. And so that's how I stumbled into IT. And this was before, like I said, the internet world even blew up. I had
that's
no idea
amazing.
What I was talking into. Yeah.
No kidding.
It
that's
really
an
was.
Amazing story. Yeah. Yeah, it was like you intuitively knew this was going to be a great industry.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, and it all started with just calming myself and listening to my voice and my inner voice and thinking about, you know, what it is and how I wanted to live my life. So, it was a turning point for me because that's when I started realizing that I had this inner gift that I could listen to and be guided by.
I
didn't
love
realize
it,
that
Tanya.
Before.
I love it. And so, did you know it was intuition at that point, or did you just trust it as an inner voice?
I just trusted it. I didn't know. Like I said, I wasn't a very spiritual person. I just didn't know what it was. I just felt like it was guiding me to that. And in that point in my life. And then I started learning to listen to it more and more and more. Because I found that as I did, it opened doors for me that I didn't think would have been present had I not listened.
Right. Exactly.
So it was an eye-opening moment for me.
I knew we melded, Tanya. I knew we did. Now, with such your crazy busy schedule, I mean, I love your postings with your beautiful family, and I love the food postings because I'm a foodie myself. I absolutely love food. So how do you find, like, I never see, you never look you're always so balanced. You're always so, with an IT business, I would think that would drive a sane person absolutely mad sometimes. So how do you balance it all? What's your priority? What's your inner compass?
Yes, and to be honest, it is kind of maddening because, you know, in IT, it's always evolving, it's always changing, there's always something different. And, you know, when you look at even the evolution of cell phones, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we were walking around with these 5-pound bags, you know, these Buck Rogers style headphones. And then, you know, now we have these thin profiled little, you know, devices that can hold several gigabytes of data. So, you know, things are always changing. But with technology and how demanding it can be on my schedule, you know, I really just have to take a step back and look at, like you said, priorities. And, you know, I have been in positions where I've had the opportunity to run my own company, and my husband has his own business, so I know what it's like. It's very demanding. You are everything. You're HR. You are marketing.
Right.
You are sales. You are the manager. You are everything from the CEO to the maintenance person that has to turn off the lights at the night. So it's you have to set your priorities. So what I usually do is I try to work within what I call my quadrant of importance and urgency. And I
right.
ask myself, you know, I make a list of things I need to do, and I ask myself, is it important and urgent, or is it important but not so urgent, or is it urgent, not important, or not important, not urgent? And, you know, it has to fall into one of those quadrants. And so I focus on the things that are important and not urgent most, you know, and then the other two quadrants, they kind of fall and become secondary. Another thing that I do, which I kind of, you know, is one of my tools, is I push through the, you know, the work when it's really hard. And, you know, there are times when you have to put in the hours, and there are times when you have to get the job done and you have to meet deadlines and, you know, and still deliver the same quality of work. So I say to myself, all right, this is only for a short season. I can get
right.
it done. And maybe it's going to take me, you know, 2 months or 3 months or 4 months down the road. But when it's done, I'm going to reward myself. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to work hard now, but I'm going to play hard later. And so when I play hard, I just go all out and I really treat myself. You know, hey, guys, we're going on a trip. Let's you know, pack your bags, let's go. And sometimes my family don't even know where we're going. We just go. And we have a good time.
That's awesome. Oh, that's awesome.
So that's a part of it, too. But, you know, at the end of the day, one thing that I always, always ask myself is, when I am breathing my last breath, what am I going to remember the most?
Right.
Am I going to say to myself, gee, I'm so glad that I worked that 60-hour work day and I put in that extra time over the weekend and I got that project done? No, I don't think so. I'm going to remember the smile on my kid's face. I'm going to remember the joy that I had with my husband on that trip to Napa Valley. I'm going to remember the things that brought life and love into my home, you know,
right.
as, you know, from on a day-to-day basis. And so that to me is how I set my compass, and that to me is more important than anything else, love, life, and family. And so that's how, or at least some of the tools I would say that I use to strike the balance between home and work. And,
oh,
and I think we all
that.
Have to do that.
We do. We definitely
Absolutely.
Do, because if we don't, life runs us. We don't. Yeah, we don't get the opportunity
yeah.
to have life work for us. And now you know, what I love about you is that for someone who's in a technical field, you know, I mean, my own ignorance included, I tend to have thought, not recently, mind you, but in the not so distant past years, I always considered computer people to be very focused and kind of like, you know, like technical-minded, like very focused.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm learning
mm-hmm.
is that there's a whole lot of personality and wit and humor with IT people. Thank you, Tanya.
You okay?
Which really
yeah.
is a wonderful, wonderful piece. Now, how did these experiences that you're going through, like listening to your inner voice and evolving and transforming in your changing,
mm-hmm.
how did these things shape your life? Like, give me some examples on listening to your intuition and listening to your inner voice, because I just love that you discovered that
mm.
young in your life.
Yes. You know, there's been so many instances, and I can tell you listening to my inner voice has at times even saved my life, or saved me great stress, or brought me into a place where I was able to receive great blessings. And we can talk about all of that, but I think I want to give my fellow OMAC insiders the opportunity to speak too
okay.
as well.
Okay.
I would love to share that with you, Lisa. But I just don't want to, I don't want to,
we
don't
still have a few more minutes. Go,
everyone's
just
time.
Give,
okay.
give me one little story on following your intuition, and we're good. We're good.
Okay. So if I had to pick one thing, in particular, other than deciding upon my career, I would have to say the biggest one for me was when my husband and I were both working, and I was actually on assignment in a project in Miami, Florida, and my husband said to me that, we don't spend enough time together, blah, 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 because, granted, I was a management consultant at the time, and I was only coming home on weekends. But something told me that we were about to have a family. And, no, I'm not joking. Something told me this. And then I even went to the doctor, and I said, I took this, how you take the test. I took the test,
right.
And it came back positive. But then when I went to the doctor, they said, no, ma'am, I'm sorry, but you're not with child. That was an erroneous test or something along those lines. They said to me I wasn't with child. And I thought, oh, okay. I didn't know, tests could be wrong that way, but, I just kind of dismissed it and then went along my, my normal day-to-day things. As I was out with a friend of mine and we were talking, we were both just having some girl times. I had ordered a drink, and I had this chocolate, I think it was a chocolate martini, and my girlfriend had ordered something. We were just chit-chatting, and then just as I was about to lift the drink to my lips, I said to myself, no, Tanya, you can't because you have life inside of you.
Wow.
And I think, and I don't know why I just felt so strongly that I did, but
right.
It was just there, and I could not shake it. It was like something I just could not dismiss. So I just let the drink sit, and I told my girlfriend what I was thinking. She said, well, Tanya, maybe you should go back to the doctor again just to be sure because, maybe the test was wrong, but then he could have been wrong too. So I
right.
said, okay. I waited another couple more weeks. I made another appointment with the doctor, and I said, when he asked us to come into the office, me and my husband, and he said, well, I have some great news for you. Congratulations.
Oh,
and so
my
that
goodness.
Was one of those instances where,
what a great story.
I'm listening to this unction where I think
right.
something is happening or about to happen. And even though all the external signs may say no, it's just,
and
you know,
the experts.
Yes.
And
yes.
the experts
and
telling
experts.
You're not. Yeah.
Yes.
That's
Tell
an incredible
not.
Story. Wow.
Yeah. So, there are some times when I just have this unction, it's what I call an unction or a knowing, where things
right.
are happening, even though from externally, it may seem that it's not happening.
That's
so
right.
I think
it's that inner knowing.
That's probably one of the best instances I can give.
Oh, that's awesome. Tanya, I have absolutely loved talking to you. This has been such a joy. Thank you so much for being on the show today. And we will talk again. We're
okay,
going
great.
To introduce...
Thank you so much. I appreciate
oh,
everything you're
pleasure.
Doing. I really do.
Oh,
and I love
thank you
reading
so
your
much.
Poem. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Tanya. You're such a light. I really appreciate it. This is just a great show. I'm loving these ladies. We're going to move on from Tanya, and we're going to talk to Deborah Ross now. And Deborah is quite an incredible lady. She is not only an expert vet who specializes with her specific love of pet rabbits, but she's quite a dynamo, as well as a black belt instructor, martial arts instructor. I would love to be taught by you, Deborah. Welcome, welcome to Unlimited Realities, Deborah. Thank you for being my guest.
Oh, thank you for asking me. I've been looking forward to this since you did your first show with the fellow OMAG Insiders. It's an awesome way to get to know our different group members on a more personal level. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, thank you. It is. It's a real treat for me. It really is to get to know all of you guys. And Deborah, I'm just so impressed by your incredible list of what you involve yourself in. But I'm going to start first with what the obvious passion and gift of you is as a vet. And talk to us a little bit first about, you know, I truly believe that we all find ourselves in these professions sometimes that are callings. And talk to us a little bit about how you did find your passion as being a vet.
Well, the first response I think most people expect to hear is, oh, you must really love animals. That's why you did it. And that certainly is a part of it. But the thing that is a struggle for some veterinarians is you can't just love animals. You have to love the people attached to them. And I think that causes a lot of disgruntledness in the veterinary profession for some. Of course, I love animals, but my father is a retired OBGYN physician. And the relationship he has and had with his clients, they're family members. He took care of generations,
right.
And I always admired that caring and helping. And then my mother and grandmother were elementary school teachers, and I loved children and educating. And I thought, what better way, with animals, of course, I care about deeply, with medicine, teaching, helping, and caring. So I had to be a veterinarian. That was the only thing that gave me everything I wanted to do.
Wow, that's great. And then you moved into, not
what
only
time
are
does
you...
the bell ring? Oh, 14, okay. I'm going to start talking around 12:10.
It looks like there's
Well, where will
a,
you go? Won't they yell at you?
It looks like there's a love of rabbits for you. So talk to me a little bit about how this love of rabbits began and also the awareness and the fundraisers organizations connected to your love and openness and awareness for it.
I started out having pet rabbits when I was probably about 8 years old. So I always kind of had a fascination for them. And then when I became a veterinarian, I wanted to work with small animals because I could do more. And there were very few veterinarians back in the mid-80s when I first became a veterinarian that would even work with rabbits. They were basically raised for lab use, meat, and they weren't really a popular pet. So fortunately, I've been in on the ground floor in the last 30-some years where I've seen them go from an outdoor hutch pet to in-the-house, litter-trained, and they can have any medicine or surgery that any dog or cat could do. So I kind of found my niche that way because nobody else wanted to work on them. And
wow.
That involved with I transitioned and started helping different rabbit rescue organizations that rescue pet rabbits that people get tired of and just throw out in the yard. They don't want them anymore. And I volunteer my time for spaying and neutering, their medical care. My daughter, her Girl Scout Silver Award, we did a big project with the House Rabbit Society in Pennsylvania and Delaware with microchipping, which is permanent identification for rabbits. We implemented that program and computerizing their records. And so that's my big involvement with bunnies. But I also I work with the Humane Society, and every year I volunteer and go into Philly and vaccinate, spend all day vaccinating dogs and cats against different diseases. And I also, for Pennsylvania, I'm a member of the animal response team. So if there are any disasters, I'm one of the veterinarians that responds and can provide shelter for the animals. So that's just my joy in being able to help any way I can.
Wow. You do a lot. You do a lot. Now, in addition to all of this, let me just give a little insight to the audience on how much you do give. You're a volunteer for the Girl Scouts in southeastern Pennsylvania for the last 6 years. You're a fundraiser for psoriasis. You are very, very compassionately involved with your mother, who is moving through Alzheimer's disease. You used to be a trainer for thoroughbred horses. How cool. I mean, an exerciser for thoroughbred horses. Uh-huh. I think that's so cool. Half of my family are like big horse people. So it's like horses are like always so cool for me. All right, so this one, I really want to come visit you and have you teach me this one. She's a second-degree black belt and instructor, audience. I really, really want to be taught by you. And this is huge. You are a 4-year breast cancer survivor. So I really want to talk a little bit about this piece because, to me, you're a warrior. You obviously do not let grass grow under your feet at all. So let's talk about this. This is a really important piece that, you know, it's out there. We hear it. We're affected by it, by loved ones, our friends. But until it affects you personally, you just don't know the magnitude of what you're dealing with. Let's talk about you and your diagnosis of breast cancer. How did that happen, and what did that feel like for you?
Well, I've always been monitored closely because I have a strong family history for breast cancer. My mother she had her first mastectomy, I believe, in her mid-40s and her second in her mid-50s. And I have a sister that's had cancer. Fortunately, I don't carry the BRCA gene for it, but it's in the family. So I've always been very vigilant. And it was found on a routine mammogram, just a little, you know, tiny speck of a spot, and it ended up being cancerous. So it was fortunate, you know, just a lumpectomy, 6 weeks of radiation. But the radiation wasn't bad. I mean, it was an eye-opener to be like, oh, my gosh, this really can happen to me. Thank God I checked. And also, it kind of shifted gears a little bit and changed my focus of things that were more important to me, because I could, the little glimmer of not living till you're 90 was thrust upon me at that time. But that, I think the radiation was the biggest struggle, because the facility is about 45 minutes from where I live. And unfortunately at the time, and I do think this was completely related, my daughter was 11. And while I was going through surgery and radiation, she developed psoriasis, and it's definitely stress-related. And I can't help but think what I was going through kind of brought it out in her, and, you know, feel a little guilty about that. But it just goes to show you, I think, how much stress can rule your life, bring out diseases, and it's really changed my focus for relieving stress, which led me into the martial arts.
Oh, so that's incredible.
How I ended up there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an incredible story. You know, at 11 years old, your daughter, you know, that had to have been such an emotional piece for her to have to watch her mom go through that and for that emotion to come out in the skin. I mean, I totally agree. I think that that's a very, you know, it easily could have been a trigger. So she's 15 now, and you guys look like you're so tight. You look like you're such a great mom and daughter combination. I mean, honestly, it's like you guys are like two little peas in a pod. Talk to me a little bit about how your relationship evolved from that with her, because I'm sure that that really deepened your connection and your, you know, your bond as a mother and a daughter. It's something that you'll never ever, you know, you'll always have.
Well, it did, because with her being so young, they really didn't want to put her on the strong immune suppressive, potentially bringing out cancer type of drugs that are often required for psoriasis. So gave me a focus away from my problem to care for her. And so going to the different doctors and specialists, and over a period of a couple of years trying all the therapies, did bring us a lot closer, because we spent a lot of time together in the car going places, and we took up biking, which is a way to exercise and deal with stress. And fortunately now you would never know she has it. She takes Stelara, which is an injection every 3 months, not approved for use in children in the States, but it is in Europe, and we managed to get on it. It's working great. But it's also, once she developed psoriasis, never worried about her appearances, even though you know how middle school is. It's awful.
Right.
But she wanted to get involved in raising money for psoriasis. So we both do the fundraisers with the biking and the walks and the runs to raise awareness about that. And it kind of gave her a focus. And fortunately, in a weird kind of way, her Girl Scout troop leader has psoriasis as well. So it gave her somebody she could talk to that completely understood what she was going through, and that was a godsend.
Oh, no kidding. What a blessing that is.
Yeah.
Isn't that,
mm-hmm.
you know, you just, when the things like that happen, it's just, thank you, God. Now,
mm-hmm.
there's this piece that I really just want to talk to about, because it's such a piece that's, you know, it's becoming an epidemic in our country, in our world. I'm watching a girlfriend of mine going through it with her husband, and he has Alzheimer's, and he's in the last stages of it, and it's a horrible, horrible, horrible thing to watch. Talk to me about what this is like watching your mom. It can't be easy. It's got to be an education and a learning. It's got to be opening up so many different avenues for you and your sisters. Your poor mom has Alzheimer's, and you're dealing with that part of your journey right now. Talk to us in regard to how that is for you.
She's always been a very independent, take care of herself, organized kind of person, and she was taken care of my grandmother during my grandmother's last few years of life, and that's when we kind of noticed that her organization wasn't quite so good. So to make a long story short, she was diagnosed with it, moved to live with a sister of mine. But the progression of it is absolutely shocking.
Right.
It's literally like I'm watching her die, but her body's still alive. And that's the best way I can explain what it is to me. Your parent is dying. The communication is hardly there. The recognition is going quickly. And it's just torturous that I mean, she's on medications, but there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do. And I just remember one of the things she said to me, having herself been a cancer survivor and other issues along her life, was, I don't care what happens. I just don't want to forget you girls or lose my ability to communicate and recognize you. And darn it, if that isn't the thing that's happening. And
oh, God bless
it's
her.
It's just the most awful thing, and I think there are so many factors that cause it, and I think that's why we're seeing just what seemingly seems like an epidemic of it.
Right.
I just don't know. I mean, so that's becoming one of my other things that I try to help with. In fact, my daughter, again, here with her Girl Scouts, thank God for that organization, her Gold Award, which is like an Eagle Scout award for boys, is on Alzheimer's, and she's creating a book, pictures and categories, so that people with Alzheimer's who can't get the words out will be able to point at pictures to help get communication. So that's our current project that we're working on.
Oh, that's awesome. What an awesome project.
Yeah.
Oh, she sounds like a great kid. You've done well, Deborah.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Where can we go in talking about your practice? What would you like to tell our audience in regard to being pet owners? I'm a pet owner, and I know that there's so many things out there right now that are good and positive for our pets. Is there something that you want to emphasize or encourage us with our animals, or anything you want to say to us about?
Well, I do have one of my current soapbox moments.
Great.
And I don't mean to step on any toes with this, but I have a real problem with the pet food companies lately. Using buzzwords, pictures on the bags that don't represent the food on the inside, and you hear gluten-free. Well, cats are not gluten-free or don't have that disease, I should say. Gluten is not a problem, never has been for cats. And there's only one known line of Irish setters, an inbred line of Irish setters that has gluten sensitivity. So
wow.
That gluten
wow.
is not an issue for pets. It's an issue for people, but it's a buzzword.
Right.
Grain-free. I could explode
okay.
when I hear that. I'm sure there are pets that have problems. Yeah, you can see. I get passionate. There are pets that have problems. That's true. But proteins cause more allergies. Meat proteins cause more allergies and problems than grains do.
Really?
And grains contribute. Yeah. I mean, chicken, beef, egg, those are far more allergy-inducing and GI problem-inducing than wheat, corn, rice,
okay.
quinoa, whatever you want to use. And grains contribute valuable nutrition. And organic is great. Love that. Holistic doesn't have diddly squat to do with animal food. Why they put holistic on a bag is beyond me.
Yeah.
It doesn't relate to food.
Yeah.
It relates
right.
to, like, bringing all the parts together and looking at parts all as
right.
one.
Right.
And then raw diet, oh, my God. that's like an accident waiting to happen with raw food
yeah, talk
handling
to me about
in homes. With,
yeah,
with
talk to me about
my
raw
worry,
diet.
Yeah, raw diets. Yeah, animals in the wild eat raw food. We used to eat it, too. We don't do it
right.
now. You worry about parasites. You worry about bacterial infections. And raw diets, if they've been frozen, that can kill a lot of bacteria. That's okay. But you're still thawing it out. You're touching it. You're handling it. And if you want to feed that, that's okay. But don't let your kids touch it. Don't let anybody who's immune suppressed at home touch it, because of the possibilities of bacterial infections. I worry
okay.
dreadfully, and the diets aren't balanced. You can't just throw in a steak and think that's it, you know.
Right, right.
Raw is okay if I think you do your research and make sure the mineral content is balanced. I mean, goodness sakes, I saw a dog a couple of months ago, a nine-month-old puppy with a urinary bladder full of bladder stones, and it was on a raw diet. You can't tell me that's not from an imbalanced diet.
Oh,
so,
my
anyway,
goodness.
That's my soapbox.
Oh, that's horrible.
Read the label and don't believe the pretty pictures on the front, because one thing that's crucial, if a diet says it has chicken in it, the chicken definition for pet food is not the same as it is for human food. So it's not going to be the cute little chicken breasts in there. So just keep your eyes open. Don't believe everything you read. That's all I'm going to say.
I love you, Deborah. I love you. That's so raw and so real. I'm glad. I'm glad you say that, because we have a German Shepherd, and of course, you know, I would never get a full blood dogging. I'd always get a rescue after this. I love my dog, but they are full bloods are a little high maintenance, and I don't do high maintenance
mm-hmm.
very well. But yes, when we first got them, you know, we get the best, you know, dog food. What is it, Blue Buffalo or some stuff?
Mm.
But it's like, you know, you go in and it becomes this, you know, like you're buying for someone who's got a special diet. And finally, I put a nip to that. So I'm glad
yes.
Glad to hear all of this, Deborah, because
it's
my pets
marketing.
Are getting fed very well. Yes, they're loved
yeah.
and they're spoiled rotten.
yeah.
Thank you so
Good.
Much, Deborah. You
oh,
have been
welcome.
Such a light for the show. And
oh,
God bless
you
with all your endeavors and your fundraisers, and God bless you in your endeavor with your mom and everything that's
oh,
going
thank
on.
You.
So. My prayers for all of that. And thanks for being on Unlimited Realities. I really, really appreciate
oh,
you coming on today.
Thank
and
you so much, Lisa.
You are so welcome, Deborah. I really, really, this has been a great show. We're going to introduce our third guest today, and this is going to be Eileen Fruit Handler. And Eileen has got such an incredible story. She starts off in corporate America and turns into a yogi, and it was not an easy path in between. And without further ado, I would love to bring on Eileen Fruit Handler now. Welcome, welcome, Eileen. Thank you for being a guest on Unlimited Realities. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Lisa.
You are so welcome.
Here. I'm so grateful.
Oh, it's so good to have you. Now, you have an incredible, incredible story. And I want to start off with kind of like the stepping stones of where you became actually where you are today. So where you are today is far different from where you began, and you began a completely different track in corporate America. So let's talk a little bit about how you found yourself in corporate America, first off, and then how you moved into your your home life.
Right. Well, I started actually as an executive secretary for General Electric Company in Fairfield, Connecticut. And I was working for Jack Welch, who wasn't the CEO at the time. And I wanted to go back to college to get a degree because I wanted to be in management.
Okay.
So they gave me a leave of absence. I went to Sacred Heart University in Connecticut. And I actually got a bachelor's degree in economics and business, which led me to a management training position when I got out of college. And all I wanted to do was move up the corporate ladder, you know, get my MBA. And I didn't really think about getting married or having kids. It was just one focus, you know, looking up that ladder. And I did move from Bristol-Myers into New York City, and I worked for Time Magazine.
Wow.
As the manager, another magazine. I love magazine business. And I managed the 44 floors of Time Magazine.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even supervised the underground, you know, receiving of the building. So I was working and getting my MBA at NYU, and there was this gnawing feeling that, you know, I wanted more. I wanted a partner. I wanted to have children. And lo and behold, I came to Florida on vacation and ran into my late husband, Cliff. And we immediately got engaged and got married. I moved to Florida.
Wow.
And that was the beginning. So I had three kids, Sarah, Danielle, and Austin, fruit handler. And I wanted a job where I could, you know, live their hours. They were in school. So I started to teach, and I started working as a teacher in the school system, and it worked out, you know, perfectly. In the summer, I started working at camps, at summer camps, and I ended up working at sleepaway camps, you know, where they could go for free, and I put money away for college, and my then-husband would have visits to camp while I was working in the summer, so it was fun. We had a blast, and, you know, this went on for years. And then he actually asked me to quit teaching and come work for him 6 months before he passed away. Yeah, and I said, why? Oh, you should. I need you to come in and manage it. So I went in, managed his practice. And 6 months later, in 2012, he suddenly, unexpectedly, for those who don't know, he had a heart attack. And he passed away immediately, shocking, you know, leaving us all in terrible shock and grief.
God
bless you. Yeah, so it was unbelievable. I spent a few months selling his practice and business, you know, looking at selling my house. And I kept saying, why? You know, why? And what am I going to do? And that's when I went back to teaching.
Okay.
And this gnawing feeling in my head kept saying, you know, do yoga. People said, do yoga. And I started doing yoga, and that's what really saved me. It got me up off, you know, the paralyzed floor that I was on in grief. And the mat helped me so much that I wanted to help other people. And my teachers, yoga teachers, were saying, why don't you become a yoga teacher? So that's how I went into teacher training at Yoga South in Boca Raton, which is one of the hardest schools to go to. And I loved it. And then I brought it to the high school where I work.
No kidding.
It was really... Yeah, that was my goal. I said, we need to have yoga in high school. So now a lot of the high schools around where I live actually give credit for yoga. I teach an after-school class to the teachers. I teach
That's
an after-school
awesome.
Class to the fitness. Yeah, it's great. It's really helping people focus, relax. You know, it's more than a flexible thing that people think it is.
Right. Oh, that's incredible.
So,
now, what drew you back into the schools? You talk a little bit about... I know that you had a mm-hmm. moment of seeing the confusion in the teenage suicide rising, and that seemed to be a really strong calling for you. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Because the teenage suicide rate is just, it's off the charts. It's you know, they're not feeling heard. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay. We have a few, you know, classes and groups all around where I live that are trying to have hotlines and helplines. But one of the things they have, I'm not in charge of it, but I'm very much a part of it and promoting it, is a yogathon every year to raise funds and money for awareness and help of teenage suicide. And in Parkland, where my kids grew up, there's been a high rate of teenage suicide, and people don't really know why. So all I can say is I let every child know I'm always here if you need me and if you need to talk, and it will always be,
right,
you know, between us. You have to establish trust, even, you know, in any circumstance, but especially with kids. You have to have a circle of trust with them. And when I teach yoga, I let them know this is just here. This is just us. And if you ever want to talk to me after class, I'm here. If you need someone to call at 2 in the morning because you can't call your parents and you need a ride home from a party, call me. I'll pick you up with no questions asked. And I've always said that to kids. So,
yeah,
I went into yoga teacher training with the goal in mind of helping high school kids.
Wow.
And
oh, that's awesome.
But that is a, that is one of, you know, my give backs and most important callings. I also work with trauma-based yoga. I was trained to teach Connected Warriors, which is free yoga for vets.
Wow.
And it's trauma-based for, yeah, for post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, PTSD.
Oh,
as well
awesome.
As, as well as another group that I am just starting to work with, Exhale to Inhale, which is trauma-based sexually assaulted and domestic violence survivors to help them to be empowered, to get back on their feet, you know, to get back into the community and help other people.
Oh, that's incredible, Eileen. Is there, are there different techniques that you would use with, like, PTSD people versus someone who's just coming in to chill and bliss? Like, is there, are there specific, Okay.
Yes, I'd say one of the main things, for example, with Connected Warriors, for yoga for vets, we don't use Sanskrit, you know, Indian words. There is no Sanskrit, and there is just English, and we do a lot more of a yin yoga, which is where you hold poses longer. It's a little less stressful, and a lot of wall. Yeah, we use, like, the wall for that support so they can feel that extra support, you know, not being in the middle of a class. Yeah. And
wow, that's great.
That, yeah, the most important thing is, as listening to Deborah, my pet peeve, when you see these pictures of beautiful yoga poses and people standing on their heads and hands, I can't even do that. So I don't want everyone to think, oh, so, you know, yoga, you have to do all that. Obviously, I haven't been doing yoga my whole life. I can teach it and I can say, you know, and tell you what to do to stand on your head and go through the motions and the words. But I think it's more important that you just try it. You just maybe go to a class and try yoga.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I've always been intimidated by yoga classes because I can't stand on my head. I have this thing. That, but, I mean, I do yoga, but not in a class.
Right, exactly, because you're afraid to show people. Yeah. Well, that's the first thing
I
say. Is, I'll teach you yoga so you can look cool or at least go to a class and know the poses.
Oh,
well, you know,
so
Oprah said,
know.
"Where there is, this is, here's an Oprah quote: where there is no struggle, there is no strength." And I think that sums up the story of my life right now.
That is so true, and you know, it does. We grow through what we have to grow through, and that's what I really am finding that I'm loving about these 50 OMAG insiders is the more that I'm getting to vibe with everybody is everybody is such survivors. They're so, everyone's so strong. Where, you know, it's like it's an incredible group of people.
Yes.
You know, it really, really
that
is.
That was an aha moment. We are all survivors. Oh, wow. That is great.
Yes. It's like really,
awesome,
really
Lisa.
Strong.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really loving getting to know everybody and this just incredible, generous, open hearts of everybody. Let's, you know, I don't want to go into the emotional piece. I know it was a heavy, heavy, heavy emotional piece for you to lose your husband. I can only, imagine what you have gone through and the kids have gone through. God bless all of you. Let's talk a little bit on, on, you know, God gives us blessings in the midst of devastation. Talk to me about how that devastation, which is, you know, knocks you, knocks the wind out of you, how did it evolve you? How did the grief change you, your relationships? What went through you as a transformation?
Wow. You know, it was so shocking. He was a vibrant, loving, caring dad and husband. And my daughters were in college. They went back to college. But my son was in his senior year in high school. And thank God for his swim coach. She made him like captain of the swim team. And or he became captain of the swim team. And we were immersed in college applications. And, you know, well, most of my friends were couples. So that part of my life basically ended. And maybe it was my own discomfort, but I knew that I had to close doors to open new ones. And I just wanted my children and whoever was in my life to see that I was going to set an example of rising up.
Right.
Becoming something more than just a widow. And finally, I started not caring what people think and saying, I'm sorry, you know, your idea of widowhood isn't what I look like. And I told my kids that they had to be proud and make their father proud and honor his memory. And I really, truly believe I'm still doing that because he did a lot of fundraising and things for other people. And he was always putting up the good fight for anyone, you know, that needed it. And I had to do that. I had to evolve into a fighter, a survivor. When I applied for the O Magazine Insiders, I remember sitting there thinking, I do deserve this. I have been through an Oprah-esque kind of thing, not comparing to her life, but I want to do something where I can help people and push them up and make them rise above and empower them like that. And, you know, when you think about being empowered, what did Oprah say? You have to do for others, and that will leave you feeling fullest, and that will make you rise above.
That's right. That's amen. And I mean, you know, the story of your courage and your power and overcoming this is just absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, when things like this happen, it is, you know, a transformation. You're moving on from friendships. You're evolving friendships. But on the blessing of that, you actually get to look at it a little differently because after you've had friends that may be, you know, enmeshed in couples and all of this, sometimes you grow and they don't. And this gives you that opportunity to really redefine your life and really redefine who you want to bring in, who you want to draw in, and really what kind of fun you want to redefine for yourself, you know? I marvel at your strength, your courage, your ability to really see the bigger picture and embrace it, and to not let something as devastating as this keep you from really exploring new heights. I mean, your husband's so proud of you over there on the other side watching. It's like
you're going to make me cry.
It's just that, you know, you're doing such incredible work, phenomenal work. You've evolved your soul. So it's just really, really a blessing to know you. And I'm just really, really, really blessed to know all of you people in the O Magazine family. This is just an incredible group. And I want to thank you for your story. So
you're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Where can we guide our South Florida audience to your studio? Please let them know where they can find you.
Oh, yes. I am in Pompano Beach, and my website is Third Eye Yoga Shala. Shala means studio. Your third eye is for wisdom. And all the information is there, and I have a blog and, you know, all that good stuff. I do a lot of private, but I work out of a couple other studios in Boca Raton. And they can just go there and look up my number, information, email, and email me anytime, any questions, anything they want. I'm there for them.
Wonderful. And thank you, Eileen. Thank you so much for being on the show and telling your story. It's a powerful one, and I know it gives a lot of people a lot of faith in moving on in their own challenges that life throws at all of us. So thank you. Thank you. God bless you.
You're welcome.
And audience, oh, thank you very much. I'll take that. Thank you, audience. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for tuning in today to Unlimited Realities. And I want to thank again my wonderful, wonderful guests, Tanya Taylor, for her inspiration. A big thank you to Deborah Ross on her informative story, and to Eileen Fruithandler for her courageous story and empowerment, and to the O Magazine family, to Carol Lonigan, for all your support, for all of the help and everyone's love and support that for this show, and bringing me your bios and your information. You've just been a fabulous group. And the code word, if you've been tuning in and listening for the year's subscription to O Magazine, is Spirit. So God bless all of you. Thank you so much. And we will be on next month with our next group of O Magazine Insiders. So tune in and stay tuned. Thank you again for listening. God bless all of you, and have a great, great week. Bye-bye.